time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 135 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
More chickens.
We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too. Don't forget. We brew coffee from a coffee house in historic Gettysburg, PA. Bantam Coffee Roasters. Holly, and what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
Today's delicious coffee is Ethiopian. It has notes of tea rose and lemon acidity.
It is so good. And you too can drink Bantam Coffee Roasters. Where can you go?
BantamRoasters.com.
And follow them on Facebook and Instagram. So, are you ready to sip some coffee and chat?
I am. But first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. This month, you can receive 30% off if you're a first-time buyer.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats.
Orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein. It's perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
This offer does not apply to subscriptions and cannot be combined with any other discounts.
It's a great time to try Grubly Farms if you haven't yet. Use the code CWTCL30 for 30% off your first purchase. Try it today. Okay, so how are you doing today?
Great on this side. How are you doing?
Doing really well. The babies are getting so big.
So big.
Oh my goodness. Those Cochins, I cannot tell you how big they are. And they walk around like they rule the yard of the babies.
You should see my Brahmas and the Langshan. Holy moly, are they big birds. I mean, and they're just 8 weeks old and they are big.
They're big. I can't believe they're only 8 weeks. I keep looking at them like they've got to be older than that, but they are not.
If you showed them to me and said, how old do you think they are? I would say closer to 12 weeks.
I know. And my coach can walk around like we were saying, what West Side Story, what is it? The Jets and the...
Oh, the Sharks and the Jets.
Like, and then the little Houdans and Margo, the Buff, are like running around for their lives. They're like, they're coming for us.
I don't think they're running for their lives. I think they're running because they like to run. It's like you take them out and it's like hysterical hilarity.
Oh, yeah. We took them out yesterday in the little pen, which we sit out with them 100% of the time because the pen doesn't have a top, but it's tall. It's like at least 4 feet tall. And one of them, I think it was Celeste, she climbed midway up the fence and then climbed the rest of the way and was like hanging on the top like, I'm out. Here I am.
Well, that's funny.
I know. They're like, we're ready to go. And when you have them out free in the yard, they run.
Yeah.
Fast.
Yeah, we don't have them fast. Free. They have to be confined if they're out in the yard.
Oh my God, I had them free. I was running like a mad woman out there. It was crazy.
The other thing we have going on is we have started integration with Rambo.
Oh, yay.
So by the time this episode drops, it would be nice if he were fully integrated into the Nankin Bachelor flock. But we do have plan B in case this does not work.
It all depends on if they look at him and say, you do not look like us. Or if they say, oh, it's another guy. Come on in.
I mean, he's close to them in color, you know, golds and buffs and that. But with the beard and the feathered legs, he's not very Nankin-like.
No, he could be just different enough that they're like, guy, you're not coming in here.
Yeah. So we'll see. But again, we have a plan B. So if it doesn't work, he will get some girls of his own and have his own
harem.
Yeah. Give him his own harem. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So this brings us to this. If you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a written review. It does amazing things for the growth of our show. And while you're there, hit that subscribe button. There's two things. You never miss an episode, and it's another great way that we can grow.
A huge thank you to our most recent reviewers. Hey, that reminds me, were you dancing and singing with the chickens? Because we hit 200 that week.
Yay! Yes, I was.
If you're looking for other ways to support the podcast, you can share your favorite episodes on social media. You can check out our Etsy store. We have t-shirts and mugs there, and we should be having some new merch very soon.
Should be coming in soon.
you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. You can check out our levels of membership and welcome to our newest patrons.
Yes, thank you so much.
The other thing you can do to help support the podcast is visit our website and our show notes, use our affiliate links and discount codes, and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tea for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tea. They are so cute and so soft.
In the February box, I absolutely love the red iron rooster trivet and the seed block.
I really love that egg timer. It's going to be great when I'm baking. And those chicken stickers are going to be awesome on notes I send out.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order, and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
Have you heard of Strong Animals Chicken Essentials? They make natural supplements for your flock.
Strong Animals has used plant-based products and natural approaches to promote the health and vitality of backyard flocks. Their products contain organic essential oils, prebiotics, and other natural ingredients to support the immune system and digestive health. Give your chicks and chickens what they need to thrive with Strong Animals health products. Visit GetStrongAnimals.com today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock. Request a free catalog today.
Bum, bum, ba, bum, bum, it's time for Breed Spotlight, girl!
What is that?
It was a very large chicken walking.
What are you trying to say?
This week's Breed Spotlight is...
the Brahma.
Yes, it's a very large chicken.
Yeah, they are. We'll actually talk about that in a little bit, but I don't know about all that, man.
They're very large and they're very cute and friendly birds. We'll just say that.
They are. The beautiful Brahma is one of the gentle giants of the chicken world.
See, you said giant too. So yes, well, there we go.
I said it in a nice way.
I did too. They just walk like with purpose. Boom, boom, boom.
They have sweet and silly personalities. They are absolutely wonderful companions.
Oh yes, they are.
The Brahmas have well-feathered legs and profuse amount of fluff.
They are one of the fluffier breeds, that's for sure. Oh,
so much loose feathering. They're so beautiful. The Brahma were one of the breeds that ignited hen fever in Victorian England and America. They sold for very large sums of money, and they still remain a beloved breed with both the show community and backyard chicken keepers.
Yeah, they're one of the favorites, I think.
They really are. Brahmas are in the Asiatic class. They are currently found in the recovering category of the Livestock Conservancy's conservation priority list.
Yay! Confetti, confetti.
Yeah. The Cochin is as well. And I know there are some people that make a contest, Brahma or Cochin, and I'm like, yes.
Yes, why both.
Why do you have to pick one? Lang Shin too. Yes, yes, yes. Why do you have to pick one?
For everyone who's been listening to us all along knows that Brahmas are one of your favorite breeds, so, and so are Cochin. So, yeah.
The Brahma has a convoluted history. I was reading through the early poultry historians, and it just gave me a headache. And you know I don't say that. I can get through some pretty dry history.
You mean Lewis gave you a headache?
No, he wasn't the one who gave me a headache, really.
Oh, man.
It was a lot of the others. So I was trying to sort through all these various claims and arguments, and I was about to give up and go out and sit with the chickens with a glass of wine, but I persevered because we want a good breed spotlight.
Everybody wants to know where the Brahma comes from.
Right. So Brahmas, or the original stock that was developed into what we know as Brahmas, arrived in the US and the UK about the same time, so about 1850.
That was another chicken that we just talked about recently.
The Houdan
that came in. 1850 was a popular year for chickens popping into the U.S. Everybody was like, yeah, get them here.
Get some fancy chicken. Well, that was some of that Queen Victoria stuff, too.
Yeah.
So these various early versions of the Brahmas were called Chittagongs, Gray Chittagongs, Gray Shanghais, and Brahmaputras.
Okay.
Some of this stock did come from a ship that had been docked in India in the Brahmaputra River.
Okay.
And the chickens were given the same name. That makes sense, right? It came from the last geography where the chickens had been. But there are also plenty of sources that claim that some of the stock came from Shanghai and that the birds that came from Shanghai were the result of a cross between Cochins, known as Shanghai fowl, and Malays.
I can 100% see that.
I can see it too. Probably the, you know, the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. This is just a little geeky note. In some parts of Asia, there is a bird called a Chittagong.
Okay.
And it looks very much like a Malay. I don't know if it is a Malay. I just found some references to it and some photos and drawings, and it looks very Malay-like.
Maybe a cousin of the Malay, maybe.
Maybe. So by 1874, the Brahmas had a breed standard. They had the shorter name, shortened to Brahma from Brahmaputra.
Right.
And both the light and dark Brahmas appeared in the American Poultry Association's first printing of the Standard of Perfection in 1874.
Nice.
The beautiful buff Brahmas, they were developed later and added to the Standard of Perfection in 1924.
That's much later, really.
Much later. Mm-hmm. Queen Victoria did have a pair of Brahmas along with her Cochin Chinas and her Shanghai fowl. There was an American breeder named George Barnum. He presented Her Majesty with, I found some conflicting reports here. Some say that he presented her with a pair. Others say he presented her with a small flock of Brahmas, light Brahmas specifically.
Okay.
And then Mr. Barnum used all of his business acumen and marketing skills to promote this, thereby allowing him to raise the prices of his Brahmaputra birds until they were selling for as much as $150 a pair.
And way back then, that's the equivalent of like thousands of dollars, you know, to this day.
There are people now that wouldn't pay $150 for a purebred pair.
But that was smart on his end. He used marketing to push his, you know, his chickens ahead in the game and say, you want to be like Queen Victoria. You want these chickens. And it worked.
Who said the business of Americans is business? Is that Calvin Coolidge? Someone said that, but yeah.
Yeah.
I've gathered that the light Brahmas are believed to be the foundation stock for the dark Brahmas. Both varieties were extremely popular in both the U.S. and the U.K. The New American Poultry Book, which was published in 1888, author John Taggart describes Brahmas as being the largest breed of chicken.
Before somebody know, that's we right. know some Bon Jovi Jersey Giants came in.
Bon Jovi Jersey Giants.
Well, every time I think of the Jersey Giants, I think of Bon Jovi because he's from
that
Jersey.
That's one of us, but okay. Yeah, so it was probably true then. Back when John Taggart was writing, essentially the Brahma was probably the biggest fowl before the Jersey Giant had been developed. Now, Taggart, he loved him some Brahmas. The Brahmas are the first breed in the book. And like the first three or four pages are like a love letter to the Brahma.
He's like, I love you, Brahma. I love you. I love all the, when you go online, there's like the certain picture that people put up constantly trying to make the Brahma look like this dinosaur giant. And it's the way this guy is holding this Brahma.
Right.
And he, you know which picture I'm talking about.
Yeah,
they push this rooster, this Brahma rooster, to look like he's like a mini dinosaur, and he's so big. But it's all perspective in the way that they're holding him.
Well, exactly. I mean, don't forget pizza photographers. So I showed that to him, and he was like, smoke and mirrors. That bird is not that big. No.
No.
There was also the video. Remember the video of the Brahma that was a Brahma cockerel popping out of a coop?
And yes.
Enormous?
Yes.
That was another one, just the camera angle.
I think they were the same people. I think they were the same people trying to push this Brahma as huge. But we all know the Jersey Giant is larger than the Brahma. So
15 to 18 pounds on some of the Jersey Giant cockerels. That's a big bird.
Yes. Yes.
So if you've looked at the Brahma long enough, you can see where the Malay could have had a lot of genetic influence. You got the Brahma's height, that small pea comb, and the skull shape.
Mm-hmm.
The skull shape causes them to have these fierce looking brows that jut out over their eyes.
Right.
All of these are Malay characteristics. Some people refer to that as beetle brows.
Oh, yeah.
The heavy feathering, especially on the legs and the booty fluff, could all come from the Cochin, or, you know, what was at one time known as the Shanghai. You can see all of these influences in the Brahma.
Yeah, and their body shape is definitely kind of Cochin-like with all the feathering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go into the Brahmas. They're a heavyweight chicken, and they are considered dual purpose. The standards call for the roosters to weigh, like you were saying, about 12 pounds, and the hens are weighing in at about 9.5. That is a very, very large chicken. So we always like to say it's good to have provisions in your run and your coop when you have these types of chickens. They're going to be bigger birds, not going to be like a leghorn, like 4 pounds. So you have to make...
They do eat a lot, too.
Yeah, you have to make more provisions.
You do. My hens have all been closer to 8 pounds. And honestly, that looks huge to me. And it feels like a giant armful.
Yeah. My Orpingtons are around 8 pounds. And that's big in itself. So, I mean, I think
some of that has to do with various bloodlines. But the standard is calling for the 12 pounds and the 9.5 pounds, which is an enormous bird.
Exactly. So they have that small peak comb. They have the red faces, the red earlobes, and stout yellow legs. We all know I like yellow legs on a chicken. And their legs and toes are heavily feathered, like the Cochin.
Yeah.
You know, so that's always a good thing. And the tails are short and wide like the Cochins. Now let's go into color varieties. We've been talking about them throughout. There's the light Brahma, which it's the Columbian pattern. It's a white bird with black striping around the neck and the tail. The buff is also the Columbian pattern. And the dark Brahma is a beautiful steel gray and silver pencil bird with a light-headed neck.
They are absolutely gorgeous. I feel like the dark Brahma photos don't do them justice.
Yeah.
They're just, I'm just going to wax poetic because I'm looking at those three babies every day. They are absolutely stunning birds.
You're going to pull a John Taggart.
Shoot, John Taggart. My whole first chapter would be Brahmas. 3 pages is nothing. It'll be 300 pages of Brahma love.
Okay, so the hens are very good broody mamas, okay? So they're going to sit on eggs for you. They're going to hatch some eggs. But if you don't want to hatch, you could be dealing with a broody hen at some point. So know that. And they're decent layers of the large brown eggs. They generally do kind of like the Orpington. It's 3 to 4 per week in the first few years, and then they're going to drop off 2 to 3, and then 1 to 2, and lay throughout their lives. Now, the thing with the broody hen is when they go broody, they stop laying, so it extends their laying period longer. So you'll get eggs from them longer. You'll just get fewer throughout.
Longer through the year, so longer life.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So they're good winter layers, and which again, let's reiterate that winter layers means that they will stop laying in the fall and start sooner throughout the winter. Regular layers will stop laying in the fall and begin in the spring, where winter layers begin end of January, February in there, they're going to start laying again. So they're still going to take a break. Don't think that they're going to lay throughout.
Yeah, exactly. The Brahmas are fancy. Fancy, fancy chickens.
Fancy don't let your mama down. No.
I was trying to think of the right lyrics. But here's your one chance, fancy don't let me down. Yeah, there you go. Brahmas make excellent fancy addition to the chicken lady or chicken man's flock. They are great family birds. They are wonderful members of a laid-back flock. They're not really good candidates for a rough-and-tumble homestead for a bunch of reasons.
Oh, well, they're not the best of layers. They're kind of laid back. They're a little lazy, but that's okay. They make up for that in cuddle. So, you know, you're going to get a lap chicken.
You know, they like to forage and scratch. They do. I mean, they like to have some active time, but they also like long, lazy dust baths and afternoon naps. These are my soulmate chickens. Without the dust bath, anyway. Unsupervised free range with Brahmas can be dangerous for a lot of reasons, especially the light Brahma.
Any of them.
Right. It's like a gigantic white target on the ground. To have them out there unsupervised, it usually doesn't end well. And it's not that they're not predator savvy, but they're usually concentrating on what they're eating and not looking at the sky.
Right. And hawks and other animals can see them really well. White chicken and a green grass, they stick out really well. So
I don't know that they would have a lot of luck scooping up a Brahma and flying off with her, but that doesn't mean they still can't kill her.
Exactly.
So that's just something very important to note if you're planning to get yourself some Brahmas.
Now, if you're in a cold hair area, the Brahmas are cold hardy.
They do not like hot weather.
Nope. So this is a good cold weather chicken, but it doesn't mean if you're in a warmer area, you can't have them. You just have to have the provisions, have to have fans for them in the summer, someplace where you can bring them in if it's way too hot and cool them down.
Yeah, lots of shade, cool water fans. It's fans, especially in the coop at night, to keep the air moving.
Oh,
so they
yeah.
can kind of disperse some of that warm air off of them. Even shallow pans of cool water to stand in. They're soft little Brahma feet. We were talking about this before, how in the mid-Atlantic, in the winter, we're like, we're going to have all cold hardy birds, and our Orpingtons and our Brahmas and our Cochins and Jersey Giants are all doing great. And then in the summer, we're like, we're going to get all Mediterraneans. We need hot weather birds. And all of our Mediterraneans are doing great, but the cold hardy birds are not. If you're in a temperate climate, it's almost like you can't win.
Yep, that's where we are.
You just have to have provisions on hand for both extremes.
Now, let's tell everybody where they can find Brahmas. It's pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Now, Murray McMurray Hatchery has all three color varieties, and I have to say that their dark Brahmas are especially gorgeous and healthy. Absolutely beautiful.
Now, you can find them in the big supply stores, the small farm chain stores. They're popular, so they're out there.
Yep. You can always check the Livestock Conservancy's Breeders Directory for breeders that may be local to you.
Okay, so here's where the part where I'm going to say, if you have the beloved Brahma, flood our DMs with your pictures. We want to put some pictures of your Brahmas in our storyboards next week, so send them over and I will give you a story.
If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Nestera.us.
For a 5% discount, use the affiliate link in our show notes, on our website, and on Instagram. Link in bio. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies.
We personally use Roosties products with our chickens, and we're huge fans.
They have their awesome nesting pads, do-it-yourself feeder and waterer kits, and they've just released their best product ever, a new chick feeder and waterer set.
They have adjustable legs to keep food and water clean. They're super well made, and the feeder even has a removable lid so it can easily be filled from the top.
So if you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, all their products are available for prime delivery on Amazon.com.
Check out the Roosty store on Amazon or follow the link in our show notes.
Okay, so let's move on to main topic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're about to go across the pond and have coffee with Fiona. Yeah. Hey, Fiona, how are you doing?
I'm really well. What about you guys? Is it hot enough for you?
No.
It's been quite cool over
here. It's nice.
We've had very temperate spring so far. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really cool. Actually, it's been perfect.
Oh, it's been really warm here. It's been beautiful.
Nice. Well, it's hot enough to make the veggies grow, but then it gets really nice and cool at night.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but it also makes the weeds grow too, unfortunately.
Oh, I know.
Cannot deny that. So many
weeds. No.
Oh, no. So how's everything going on your homestead, small holding over there?
Oh, chicks galore, chicks everywhere. It's amazing. So we now have Taffy's chicks are about 8 weeks old. Then we have got Jelly Bean and Uno, both hatched on the same day. So they've got loads of chicks. Then we have got Orkney, who's going to, she's going to hatch. And I think it's 11 days. Now we've got Licorice, who has gone broody. So Licorice hatched Uno last year, if you remember. So, yeah, so she'll have a big batch as well, hopefully. Well, they're bought in eggs, though. So actually, I'm saying hopefully, because you never know what's going to happen with the postal system delivering fertilized eggs. It could all go horribly wrong, but I'm hoping it doesn't. And then it's a fight between Taffy brooding again, or Sky brooding for the first time, or Jura brooding for the first time. And they're really annoying me at the moment because Sky goes into the coop about 3 hours before roosting and sits there on the false eggs and makes me believe that she's going to brood. Does she actually sit there the next morning?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Does she sit there for the rest of the day? No. And Jura is just as bad. So she'll go in to lay an egg and she'll sit there for 3, 4, 5 hours. And then I'll go and I'll get really excited and think, oh, she's got really flat. Oh, she's really going to do it this time. And then she sings the egg song and comes out.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Honestly, I swear they're doing this to wind me up at the moment. Bless them. It's just so frustrating.
It the fruity days of your life.
I know. It is like a soap opera. Honestly, you couldn't make it up. But if I had to bet money on it at the moment, I think Taffy, even though she made her chicks independent and then came back on lay quite quickly, I think she's going to brood before Skye or Jura do.
Wow. It's the young and broody.
I like that. I don't think we actually get that over here. We used to on very late night television years ago. I don't think we get the Young and the Restless anymore.
Is it still on?
I have to say, I still watch it.
Well, then.
I've been watching it since I was in the womb. So it's like...
Listen, I can't talk. I'm a huge Real Housewives fan. Give me a Real Housewives show and I'll have to watch it. I'm sorry. I love it.
It's a guilty pleasure of mine, The Young and the Restless. Oh, man.
Well, now that we've got the brood report,
Let's move into what we're going to be talking about for our roundtable with Fiona this week.
This week, we are having a fantastic roundtable with Fiona. We are talking about integrating new chicks and chickens into your existing flock.
Yay!
Woohoo! Sorry, I've done every configuration of this going. So broody hens and chicks, chicks on their own without broody hens, adults, roosters.
Rescues.
No rescues, actually. So I haven't done everything.
I have that covered.
That's good.
Rescue birds. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with Fiona talking about integrating her chicks with the broody mom back into the general population.
Because that's really, of all the integration scenarios, that's really the easiest one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so, but you've got your three rules that I have for integrating, and they are space, time, and patience. And you can apply that to every integration. And depending on which one you're doing, you put more emphasis on the other. With the broody hens, the biggest emphasis, I think, is space. Because I keep describing this to people with broody hens, it's a bit like the solar system. So you've got the sun in the middle as the central core of the flock. And the broody hen, when they start to come out and start to mingle with the rest of the flock, they need lots of space because they're like the mini planet Pluto right on the periphery, kind of orbiting around the little flock in the middle of the sun. They gradually move in, come through Mars. You know, in the end, they get to Mercury. In about 6 to 8 weeks, they end up being part of the solar system and it's all hunky-dory. But they do need that space to be able to do that. Actually, having an enclosed space for the broody hen and chicks, it can really get quite dangerous. You've got to have very, very docile chickens that you completely are happy that they're safe for it to work. Because broody hen, I mean, the chicks aren't really the problem and the other hens. It's more the broody hen attacking other hens that she perceives as being a threat.
Oh, okay.
So it's more likely that the broody hen will cause damage to another hen rather than the other way, rather than the hens hurting the chicks. The chicks will be almost like collateral damage in that war. That's been my experience.
Okay.
So far, anyway.
So when you have multiple broody hens and their babies all coming back together, is it kind of like they're all in their own little circle and then, but they're coexisting together. And then finally, as the chicks get bigger, they're just all together.
Do you know, it all depends. And it seems to be dependent on how far apart the clutches are from hatching.
Okay.
So with Jellybean and Uno, they hatched on exactly the same day. So essentially they shared eggs. We had some eggs running alongside in an incubator. And then we could kind of divide out and reintroduce chicks to the broody hens, because that probably needs a bit more explanation, actually, because the broody hens can actually raise more chicks than they can safely hatch. If they have too many eggs, there's a risk during the hatching process that a newly hatched chick could be crushed by other eggs being moved around by the broody hen. So we only give a few eggs to the broody hen to hatch, and then we have some others running alongside in an incubator. So we coordinated it. So those two broodies hatched on the same day. And because there's very little, well, there's no difference in the age of the chicks, the two broody hens are probably a metre to 2 metres apart for much of the day by choice, and the chicks are running between the two broody hens, no problem at all. But then they'll go off to the separate corners of the field, you know, miles and miles apart from each other. But they don't seem to care about being in the same kind of orbit. But then Taffy and her chicks wouldn't be anywhere near them. So she'd be in a completely different opposite orbit around the flock as the sun in the middle. So it's an interesting one. Yeah.
It definitely is. Now, you have them in an open area where it gets trickier, like you said, in an enclosed run. And then when you don't have that ample amount of space, that's when the problem comes in, because then it's just too confined. Mm-hmm. So for someone who has one broody hen, they take out, they do the chicks. You did this. Well, you had to put Martha back in, but without the chicks.
Yeah, Martha went in without the chicks. Yeah, when Martha was ready to make those chicks independent, she meant it. And she started.
Oh, yeah, them. They do, don't they? Yeah.
She was done with those kids. And so I put her back in, and it took her a couple of weeks. I mean, Nankins are kind of, they're so docile and so friendly.
Yeah,
I could get away with this because I just put her right back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that George would stay with her and protect her, which he did. And it only took a couple of weeks for her to work her way back up the pecking order.
Right.
In general, though, that would not be a good idea. In general, I would go through the same process that I would really with bringing a completely strange pair of pullets in. I would put her in a pen within the run,
mm-hmm.
so that they could all see each other day after day, maybe free range them together a few times.
Yes.
Before I would tuck her in there with them at night.
Yeah. I think free ranging is also the key. Like Fiona does that all the time, but the mm-hmm. free ranging is the key. And also having them being able to see each other, but not physically get to each other, it takes a while. It can take weeks.
Yeah, it can. And that's where the patience comes in, and you have to have that patience.
So let's talk about the chicks that you're going to bring into the flock. That's an existing adult flock. Now, this can be very dangerous. So this is one reason why we talk about this a lot.
Yeah. Our rule of thumb, and I know this is the rule of thumb for all three of us because we've talked about it before, is that you never try to integrate youngsters into an existing flock that are smaller than the older chickens. And that generally means that they're not any younger than 16 weeks. They've got to be comparable in size.
Yes. No, I completely agree with that. We did have one broody hen who broke a few years ago, and she was on the old English pheasant fowl chicks. And what we did there is we had a completely separate coop with a run, but inside the free range field.
Mm-hmm.
So at all times, the chicks could see the old hens and the hens could see the chicks. And the young chicks actually learn the pecking order behavior from within the run by watching the adult hens.
Ah.
And it was really quite interesting because by about week 12, the adult hens were hanging out next to the run with the chicks. And it was adorable to watch. It really was. Now, we actually did integrate them earlier than 16 weeks, but 14 weeks. So it wasn't far off that 16-week period. But it has to be said with Old English pheasant fowl, with the space that we've got, they are fast. And you've seen the Fawkingtons. You know, they're like great big lumbering, floofy, yellow, round suns. And you've got these flashes of lightning is the only way you can describe them. Yeah. Little streaks of chestnut lightning running around the field. So they had no problems at 14 weeks, it had to be said. But normally I would stick absolutely with that 16-week rule. And then it would be watching very carefully.
Yeah, 16 weeks, they're going to be more comparable in pullet size to like the hens. And basically, they're going to be able to defend themselves a little bit better. Here's where it's different. A lot of people say at 6 weeks, 8 weeks, my chicks are able to go out. If it's super warm, they're able to go out, but they're able to go out if they are not going into an adult flock. Right. That is the difference.
If they are a new flock going into an empty coop and run, that's different.
I mean,
what Fiona said actually reminded me of something. We say, wait till 16 weeks until they're comparable in size, but then you have smaller body birds, for instance, the Egyptian phalanges.
Yeah.
But smaller body birds do tend to be a lot faster.
They are faster.
Yes.
And the other thing
is, it does make a difference.
It does.
It does. Giving them a big enough space within the run that they're protected for a while and keeping them in there every day so they can't get to each other. And then
before you're taking that carrier or whatever it is up out of the run, letting them free range together, supervised. Then they can go into the run together. And sometimes you can even take the big girls out of the run and put the babies in the run for a while and let the big girls see them in the run and kind of like say, oh, okay. Because I use this example all the time. It's like if somebody knocked on your door with a suitcase and said, hey, I don't know you, but I'm coming to live with you. You would close the door and run. You would not let them in. It's the same way with
chickens.
That's
the nicest thing that I would do.
Yeah. I mean, they have to get to know each other. But there has to be a comparable size there because the babies can get really hurt if you do it too soon.
Yeah. I mean, there's two different ways I do it. And it all depends on if they're going to be living and sleeping in the same coop, not just the same area. If they're in different coops, I would let the youngsters out for the very first time about an hour before roosting, because then you've always got fallback position. There's only an hour's period where, you know, you need to be on hand, you need to be completely watchful before they all go to their separate corners and they're roosting separately in separate coops. But if they're going into the same coop, I do it when they're all asleep and I drop them into the same coop. It always seems to be the safest way for them to kind of wake up and go, oh, who's there? But I'll make sure I'm there at dawn the next morning, because as soon as they start to wake up, that's when there's likely to be problems.
The last thing I do in the process is put them together in the coop. There are days when they're in the run together during the day, I will take them back into their pop-up at night, let them sleep and bring them back in the morning, let them be first in the run, then let the big girls out and see them there. Chickens have a lot to play with, for lack of a better word, street cred. If you have a chicken that you want to get up in the pecking order a little bit, let them out in free range in front of the other ones and leave the other ones in the run, because it gives them street cred. So this is what the chicks get by getting out there in the morning before the chickens get out. They're like, oh, you're here.
I've used the drop in at night method several times. I've used it to introduce roosters. That seems to work really well. The girls are all like, oh, there's a fella cuddling with us. And that seems to go well.
I can just see them all in the coop going, ooh, man.
Kind of ridiculous, honestly. Every now and again, you get a hen that's like wants no parts of him, but usually they're all pretty happy to have a guy to cuddle with. Do you ever find the Orpington hens fighting over who gets to sleep next to the cockerel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. It's funny because normally his favorite, the one he wants to be with, wants to be as far away from as possible, because it's just like, leave me alone.
Yeah. I just want to sleep. Just no.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now let's bring up a different scenario. Now, if you have one chicken, it's going to be really difficult to put one single adult chicken into an existing flock.
That is extremely difficult.
It can be done, though.
Okay. So if you have a single chicken and you're bringing another chicken to keep him or her company, that usually works pretty well. If it's a rescue, you might not have any choice. You might have to figure out a way to get a single chicken in there. We are potentially integrating Rambo, the rescue rooster, in with the Nankin cockerels. Maybe we should all do this, like talk a little bit about specifically what physically we use for integration. So all of our coops are standalone in pretty big runs. So what we do when we integrate is we section off a corner of the run so that that makes a pen within the larger run. And that's where the bird that's going integrated will be. They can interact through the wire. They can see each other, but they can't really hurt the newcomer very well.
Sometimes you can even put a pop-up in there. I mean, if you don't have anything to physically work, you can put a big pop-up in there. I've done that before, the big long pop-ups, and let the chickens run in the pop-up.
So what's your go-to? What is it?
It's a pop-up.
That's what you do. Okay. Fiona, what does yours usually look like when you're doing, say, older birds?
Well, we haven't done old birds in a long time because we've now got a rule for biosecurity that we only hatch on premises. We don't bring any live birds in. Uh-huh. But as I said, we had a broody hen break with the old English pheasant fowl, so they had to be raised. And we had, I know this sounds funny, I said a coop and a run. Actually, what we had was two coops and a run. And the reason we did that is because we weren't sure at what point the old English pheasant fowl wouldn't want a brooder plate in the coop anymore, because when we first put them out, we rigged up a brooder plate inside the coop, but we wanted to give them a choice of letting us know according to when they could cope without it and when not. So we actually had two coops side by side with a run attached, And as soon as they started, as soon as we had 3 nights where they weren't sleeping in the coop that had the brooder plate, we knew that they were ready for the brooder plate to be removed. So that's how it worked. Now we've got a very, very large walk-in run, and that's what we will use going forward. That is our go-to setup for any chicks which have to be raised separately. And it's perfect.
The other thing that you can get that's inexpensive are tea stakes and some like rubber netting, and you can divide your run that way also.
You can use road pins. They're called road pins, but they're sometimes sold as fencing stakes. And if you get debris netting, which is commonly used on scaffolding, unbelievably cheap.
Yeah.
Very fine mesh, particularly if you've got chicks. They are not getting through that at all. And the other chickens can still see them. We used actually the debris netting to cordon off an area for Uno and her chicks in the free range area so that they were safe for the first few days before we kind of released them into the larger flock. And it works really well.
We use T-posts and wire, or T-posts and deer netting, which again, isn't big enough for chicks to get through, but it's very, very heavy. So any of those things can work really well. You just have to figure out what works for your own setup, what's sustainable. And I think it's worth repeating the 3 things Fiona said are crucial to integration: space, time, and patience. And patience is crucial because you might go into the next step. It doesn't work. You need to back up. Try again. It can take a couple of weeks.
Yeah, or even a month. I like to, the first day they're going to be all together on a run, I put a chair in there and sit in there.
Yeah.
For a long time, because you are going to need to break up any potential squabbles that are going to be happening. You know, I have my 3 chickens that were out this winter due to some illnesses. They're going back in now. So I'm going to be integrating back the 3 adults back into their existing flock. So I'm going to be following all these. And then into my second flock are the babies going in. So I'm in the middle. I'm like doing all this right now myself. Patience is number one. It takes a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is it can happen. They just have to get to know each other.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing with patience is a very fine line to tread, because as soon as they're brought together, there is going to be an element of pecking order squabble. Right. It's a case of what's comfortable, and it's getting to know at what point is it going too far and you need to intervene, and at what point do you let it play out. I've got to be very careful how I put this, because I said a phrase once in the past and it was horribly misinterpreted by someone who took it to an extreme, because I used to say, unless I see blood drawn, I don't get involved. Now, actually, what I meant by that and what I should have said in a bit more detail is, if it's prolonged, if it's violent, or if there's any sign of blood, so all 3 of those, you have to intervene. You cannot let it go on. But there will be an element of, you know, lunging in the direction of a chick with no contact. There'll be an element of chicks being frightened by another older hen running towards them, which is still okay as long as there's no contact. But if it goes on for a long time, so if that adult hen is chasing the chick and chasing the chick and chasing the chick and chasing the chick, you must intervene. If there is contact, which looks to be painful for that chick, you've got to intervene. And absolutely, if there's blood drawn, you have to intervene.
It's not a process where you just, okay, they're 16 weeks, you put them in and you go to work for the day. It has to be done in a time when you can be out there with them, and it has to be done over multiple weeks of them getting to knowing each other without being able to touch and get to each other first to then get to that point. So I think that's the thing where patience comes in, is knowing that it's going to take you a few weeks to get there.
Most people, probably most people who are listening to this, are going to be integrating pullets into an existing flock. So the thing to remember there is you want them as close as possible to the size of the older chicks. Like Chrissy said, there's no magic bullet for this. It can take time. It takes a lot of patience. I totally agree with you, Fiona. A little chasing, I'm okay with. A peck on the head, I'm okay with. Sustained chasing, not okay. Bloodshed, not okay. A pullet cowering with nowhere to go, not okay.
And actually, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. Lots of places they can go to hide. Lots of obstacles to be able to run around will really help them as well.
Yeah.
Right.
If they've got something, a visual barrier between them and the other hens, it takes the pressure off. and lots of extra feeders, lots of extra drinkers, because the older hens will try and keep them away from those as well. That's really, really key.
And I suppose the very worst case scenario is if you have to take out one of the hens in charge for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And reshuffle the pecking order. Sometimes that's what you need to do. If you absolutely have to get all these chickens together and it's not working, you may have to take out the head honchos.
Or the ones that are doing the bullying.
Exactly. Whoever's the troublemaker for a little while and let the pecking order reshuffle. Yeah.
A little bit of a timeout. Chicky timeout.
Yep. Yes, exactly. Yep. Well, this is the young and the restless of getting these chicks into the run. It's a lot.
You know, I never knew that about Chrissy. I've learned so much this evening.
So it's a lot of drama, but in the end, it's rewarding. You'll have a bigger flock and hopefully everyone will get along in the end, as long as you take your time. And like I was saying before, don't be afraid to pull them out and start over.
Right.
It might
have a backup plan. Have that backup plan and don't be afraid to use it. It's not a failure. It is just next step on the integration. Exactly. That's all.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Well, thank you, Fiona, for coming on again this month and talking with us. We love our time with you so much.
I love it too. I love it too.
And we'll be looking forward to hearing more Broody reports next month.
Sorry, I got a bit distracted by Hugh walking across the field to check on the chicks. So it's just adorable watching my husband putting the chicks to bed. It's great.
It's fun. Aww. I like that.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Fiona.
Bye.
We just want to thank Fiona one more time for coming on and having an excellent roundtable with us this month. We know integration has been a big issue for a lot of people, so hopefully there's some helpful information in here.
Including us.
Right. Don't forget, you can check out Fiona's videos on English Country Life, her YouTube channel, links in the show notes.
Okay, so let's move on to
cracking the eggs.
Cracking those eggs. Now, this week we're talking about
smoked eggs.
And you say, what? Huh? But it's a thing.
Yes, it is a thing. I mean, we're always looking for new and interesting thing to do with eggs. And so we decided to look into smoked eggs. So this is a bit of an experiment, the egg smoking. There are two methods for smoking eggs. You can do hot smoking and cold smoking.
Yep.
You can use wood pellets or wood chips or a mix for either. Cold smoking is a long sustained smoke at 100 degrees Fahrenheit or about 37 to 38 degrees Celsius or lower. Hot smoking is obviously at temperatures higher than 100.
Smoking would come in if you want that flavor for a recipe of grilled, you know, like you do it to peppers, you do it to veggies where you really want like a smoky,
smoky flavor.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when you're going to use this.
It'll be interesting to do like smoked eggs.
Deviled eggs.
And I was thinking potato salad with smoked eggs or deviled eggs, anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Hot smoking, you're going to be cooking the eggs in their shell, and it does work. I have been experimenting with this, sometimes more successfully than other times. If you want to do the cold smoking method, you just want to hard boil your eggs ahead of time, peel them, pop them in whatever grill or smoker you're using for about 10 minutes.
Right.
If you're doing hot smoking, you need sustained heat for probably an hour and a half to 2 hours to get your eggs all the way cooked.
Yeah. And like I said, this is when you want the egg to take on that charcoal, that wood kind of smokiness for your recipe.
It's funny because the eggs kind of sweat and they get this very golden brown color. You know, it's clear that they've been smoked and the smoky taste is deep and it really is interesting. I quite like it. And of course, that's also going to depend on what kind of wood you're smoking with, your flavors.
Yeah, because it'll take on that flavor and it changes around a whole recipe. So the smoked eggs you can use in place of regular, you know, like hard boiled eggs in a recipe or whatever, and give something a deeper taste. Like you said, potato salad would be excellent, deviled eggs, those types of things.
Yeah, anything like that. I'll be writing more about this on our website in the future because my experimentation is ongoing. I've had some successes and lots of failures. But anyway, it really is fascinating. If you're a seasoned, you know, griller or smoker, give it a try. If you want to do some DIY stuff, just keep an eye on our website for when I finally write up all of my various failures.
And try it. You might like it. Let us know what you think.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on to retail therapy. Retail therapy.
Yeah.
This week's Retail Therapy, we are welcoming Trisha and Poppy. Poppy is the crossbeak Americana boy, back to our show. And Maisie was there too. So here's our interview with Trisha and Poppy and Maisie. Enjoy.
Okay, so we have a special guest today. We are going to welcome back Trisha. She's Poppy's mom, the crossbeak, the cutest little boy, Poppy. And we want to welcome you back. How are you doing, Trisha?
Wonderful. It is so nice to see your smiling faces, Holly and Chrissy. I miss seeing you guys. It's been a while.
It's been a little while.
It has been a while. And the first time that you were on the show, Poppy was there with you and joined us. Now, our listeners can't see this, but I'm looking at Poppy's girlfriend right now. Is it Maisie?
Yeah, Maisie's about the same age as Poppy, so they're just over 3 years of age. She is this cute little bearded bantam silky. She's just over 1 pound. And you know, Poppy's 7 pounds, so there's a stark difference in size between the two. But Poppy takes care of her like a little sister. He's a good big brother, and she lives in the house. She's a pet chicken, house chicken, just like Poppy is. And literally, when Poppy comes to work with me and Maisie about one time a week for speech therapy sessions, the other days they're at home. And even prior to getting Maisie, Poppy, we would find him. It's like, where's Poppy at? Well, he's behind the dining table staring at himself in this huge mirror. That's what he would do. When we come back home, it's like, oh, okay, I think he's trying to tell us something because he's looking at himself. So right. It's like, where's my companionship right there? Even though he sees me as his flock mate, I had to get a companion for him. It was only fair. Their chickens are flock. I mean, they're right. Flock animals. So even if they're pet chickens or not, I can't take them to work every day. But the days that I am at work, I can be rest assured that he is taken care and he has a purpose in life when he's not working and doing speech therapy with me.
Yeah,
that's amazing work. And we've talked about this. We touched base on this before, how the chickens can help the people that you help and how it really turns them around. It brightens them up. It gets them into their speech therapy, and it just makes everybody more calm and ready to go. That is truly amazing work.
It is, and I'm thankful for it. Honestly, can't even think of a single speech therapist that brings their chickens to work. And he earns his keep. He works in therapy sessions. Maisie really does too. In fact, I was working with an adult because I don't just do pediatrics. I had an adult, about a 38-year-old female who had a TBI. She injured herself on a propeller. She said, okay, where are the chickens? I said, they're in the other room. I can grab Maisie. And so I grab Maisie. She puts Maisie on her lap. We do our sessions. We're working on, you know, breathing. All the things from the brain to the diaphragm is all speech therapy. But I know you're here. You have me here for chickens. And so this is how I incorporate speech therapy with chickens. So Maisie's sitting on my patient's lap. I'm working on skills, techniques, and she's practicing. And then come the end of the session, it's like, okay, we're all done. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. And I go to grab Maisie from this patient's lap, and she blocks me. And oh, says, man. I'm taking her home with me. But she said it in the smoothest speech you can imagine. Because sometimes TBI, there's broken speech, there's apraxia involved, and there can be. And she said it in the smoothest way. It's like, oh, I'll back away. I'll let you enjoy for a couple more minutes. And you let me know when you're ready. And so she was giggling, having a good time. And I said, Maisie, I will make sure that Maisie comes back for all your future sessions. So I basically have Maisie working on, I think, on Tuesdays.
That's wonderful.
She's so cute. Look at her.
She literally sits on the laps and my patients just pet her. And if I'm working with a child, a mom will want to sit in the corner of the room because I want the parents in the room. They're holding Maisie, just petting Maisie, loving on her, and I'm doing my work.
That's amazing. Awesome. Those are two lucky chickens right there. 100%.
I would imagine speech therapy, especially adults, if you're the person in therapy, you're probably feeling very self-conscious. It's hard to focus and get out of yourself. But I could totally see where a big fluffy silky on your lap would just, it would completely rewire what your brain's doing at that moment. That's amazing. I love that story.
Yeah, it's so great.
Knowing that you go into, not even to go in deep terms, but we have our nervous system and one system tells us fight or flight. And, you know, the sympathetic nervous system, and we forget to breathe and we lock up and it's almost like danger, you know? The parasympathetic nervous system helps calm us, rest and digest. Poppy, but more so Maisie, helps with that. So when I know that patients come in knowing we're going to work and I'm going to push them hard because I need to get them out of their limit to hit our threshold, but that Maisie little girl is sitting on their laps and just keeping them on a level of rest, digest, relaxation. It's like meditation.
Yeah.
Easy as meditation. It's just reminding them calm.
A hen in your lap is about the most relaxing thing that I can think of. I love a hen in my lap.
Just like after work, right? That's what I do. I go to my chickens, I sit on the bench, and I'm, even if I'm not with the house chickens, I'm walking, you know, having a drink or coffee or tea and just looking at my backyard flock, and it's relaxing.
Yeah, so relaxing. That's wonderful.
So since the last time we've talked, there's another Poppy book. Very exciting. You want to tell everybody about it?
Oh, yes. So the first book was perfectly Poppy, and it basically introduces the world to inclusion and that it's okay to be different, especially if you have a crossbeak like Poppy has. And Patiently Poppy is now the next step as far as how Poppy, and it could be anybody, how somebody could help someone else in need. This book centers around basically the other people in a child's life, our life, that help. It takes a village to raise a human, takes a village to raise all sorts of things, right? Oh, yeah. And remembering it doesn't just have to be a mom that raises, a dad can, a grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, siblings, foster. I mean, this can pertain to all sorts. So the cover does show Poppy sitting on eggs, and we know Poppy is a rooster. Wonder what this is all about. This, you know, I like inspiration. Once you get this inspiring thought, and then you create it. And the inspiration behind this is we literally had a hen come from 19 miles away on our property.
Oh, I remember the story.
Her name is Scarlet. She laid 4 eggs around our property. And I don't know what made me think about it, but I'm looking in bushes that I saw her running out of throughout her property. And we have a 2.5-acre property. It's not that big, but it's big enough for her to lay eggs in. I looked like, oh my gosh, there's an egg. I felt like it was Easter. There's another egg. We get these eggs and we're able to hatch one. So we have another hen that's identical to Scarlet. And I used social media to ask for a name. Dandelion, because all the flock are named flowers. And
I remember this.
Right. So Scarlet came from 19 miles away. She was injured. She had an injury on her chest. We helped her and we kind of like blended in. Okay. Well, Poppy is helping incubator take care of these eggs while she goes and gets care. So the fact that he's able to help these eggs hatch. And it teaches the kids in the book, well, you know, it goes by weeks. So how many days does it take to hatch a chicken? 21 days. There are things and elements that I incorporate because I do speech therapy. I incorporate a lot of, you know, alliteration, early intervention stuff, rhyming, repetition. All that is in the book, but it has a good story that others can also take care of us, not just the moms. So it's an ode to, or especially the dads, but lots of others that help in a child's life.
Love it. That's so fantastic. Cute.
He rarely crows during the day unless he can't find me. I don't know. If he hears us coming home, it's like I'll hear him crowing. Like, oh, I hear the garage door opening. That's when he crows. And 5:30 in the morning. But really, that's it.
Oh, wow. Perfectly Poppy is on Amazon. Is Patiently Poppy also on Amazon? Okay, so we will link to that in the show notes so people can find it easily.
Thank you.
Perfect. I'm enthralled with Maisie back there.
I was going to say, and since the last time we spoke, Maisie, last time we spoke, you didn't have her. So she's an addition since we've spoke last time.
I think we speak like in September or October. I want to say it was like a special needs month. Maybe it was November because we did get, I want to say we got her shortly after we communicated. Okay. I had a sweatshirt on, so it had to have been in like a colder month.
Yeah, she's just too cute. Oh my goodness. We might have to release some of this video out to put some clips out. It's so cute.
I do have to say, you know, our meeting is, you know, primarily a catch up and then talking about Patiently Poppy, the third book that Maisie's going to be the star in. We're in the process right now. The illustrator and I just confirmed the contract and she'll start on the illustrations in July. So I need to make sure that editor, proofreader, everything is in place before July. But do you see she's sitting on my shoulder right now? We always have a companion item. You know, we had a stuffy, a little Poppy plush for Perfectly Poppy.
Poppy's right in our studio.
So you guys don't have this.
No.
This is for Patiently Poppy. It's a nest plush.
It's so cute.
Four eggs that go along with Patiently Poppy, one green, one blue, one yellow, and one white. That's kind of the stanza of the book. The reason why I'm bringing this up is we're in the process of book three. Hopefully that will be done at the end of this year. And the Maisie plush is already in production and that should hopefully be here by summer. And I learned my lesson, you know, two books later, it takes a long time. We were going back and forth for 5 months to agree on the color of the beak. I don't want this. I don't want that. Or can we tweak this? You know, it takes a lot of time. Once we said, okay, that's it. Now it's in production and it's being made. So hopefully it will be ready at the same time the book is, instead of having a 6 month gap between the two. So we're learning. This is the great thing. This plush, you are the first to know. I have not told anybody this. The plush has a metal thing. Have you heard of shoulderkins before?
So I think I have.
A shoulderkin is a stuffed animal you can walk around. There is a magnet that goes under their shirt and there's a magnet at the bottom of the plush. And so you can walk around with your own Maisie.
Oh my goodness.
So cute.
I'm just watching her. She snuggles into your neck. She is so cute.
Like I said, Poppy is in our studio.
Oh yeah, Poppy's right over there.
He's right on there with his book on our bookshelf.
Yep.
So we see him all the time. We think about him often and how well he's doing. I love the fact that every birthday I love to celebrate along with you for him because, you know, in the very beginning, you're like, I don't know if he's going to make it to a year. And then he kept going and kept going. So it kind of proved the fact that his crossbeak wasn't genetic. It was due to an injury. That's good for him. It turned his life into something else that he could have never imagined.
And it's teaching all of those chicken people even that there is an alternative to culling a chicken that might have a deformity or something.
Exactly.
Give him a chance.
Right.
And Poppy has taught me a lesson. He has taught so many. It doesn't matter how small or what type of animal you are or creature, they all deserve a fighting chance. Poppy last month turned 3 years old. I never imagined that he would live this long. I was expecting heartache come about a year old because, you know, it's about a year that they might last, if especially if there's a genetic component.
Right.
I have no idea how long he's going to be with us. And we will savor every moment. In fact, he's been so busy. He basically does a school assemblies now. And in fact, we do about in March, we did six, but usually about 2 to 3 a month throughout the entire year. And he and Maisie go, and they just love seeing a chicken in a chicken diaper, learning different. I'll ask the school, okay, what platform do you want me to talk about? Bullying? Do you want me to talk about inclusion? It's okay to be different. You know, it depends on maybe what recent issues that they might have been encountering at their school. But those are typically the two that we talk about. And I just love sharing them. They listen to the video books. They get to meet Poppy and Maisie, and some get to meet both of them up close and personal at the end of the assembly. So again, Poppy earns his keep. He's been working hard.
So great.
We love him.
Can you tell us a little bit about the video books? How does that work?
We basically compiled the images and the illustrations of the pages of the book and turn it into a soft copy format. When you push play, you can go to our website for that, and you push play for, let's say, Patiently Poppy. It'll say Patiently Poppy, written by, illustrated, and the narrator is, let's begin. And you push play and it turns the pages. I mean, you're just watching this video. It's like a YouTube video. And you can see a little bit of a slight animation of the illustrations. It's just so enthralling the way the narrator captures the story, the simple story. And the kids are enthralled. It's about 5 minutes. You learn a lot. And it's great for parents. I know books are great. That's why I cater to these books. But sometimes kids like the basic audio video version. Lay in your bed, watch a little iPad story, and that's it. And then it's bedtime.
Awesome. Yeah, we will link your website in the show notes as well so people can get to the video books, because that sounds fantastic.
Oh, I just love it. You're doing such great work, and it's so great to catch up with you. You have become a friend of the show. Just keep doing all this amazing work that you're doing for people, because it matters. It matters to people, and it makes a difference. And if two little chickens can go out there and make a big difference, then I don't see anything better than that at all.
It is definitely teaching the next generation. Don't tease a kiddo just because of what they look like, or you can see chickens even further than something you have on your plate. You can have them as a pet. I'm wondering how many chicken mamas were basically growing in our local community, at least. But, you know, just the love of chickens and how they matter and all of the neat things about them. Just like chickens on average have 30 vocabulary words. They talk, they converse, they have emotions, they care, they are smart. Everything you can imagine that you didn't think a chicken would be.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot from them. I certainly have.
So good. Thank you for coming on and chatting with us for a little while and catching up. So thank you. Thank you so much. We love catching up with you. Next time you're on the East Coast, we are going to have to get together. We missed you over, I think it was the fall or the summer. We missed you that way when you came over. Thank you again. And until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Yes. Talk to you later.
We just want to thank Trisha and Poppy and Maisie one more time for spending some really fun time with us. It was a great interview. We have links to Poppy's books in our show notes.
I love Trisha. She is so sweet. She is the best. Doing some excellent things with people and chickens out there.
Oh, awesome. So great.
Okay. So should we tell everybody what we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week is our annual 4th of July episode.
Yay! But fireworks! Woohoo!
Oh, fireworks. We're spotlighting the Dominique, one of the oldest breeds in America. We're going to talk about chickens at the Eisenhower Farm in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. President Eisenhower's farm. It's some really interesting stuff there. Plenty of chickens.
We're road tripping. Yeah. Road tripping. Yeah.
Cracking the eggs. We're doing mulberry crumble ice cream. It's ridiculously good.
We might save some for you guys. We're not sure.
Retail therapy. We have a little interview with our new sponsors, Bantam Coffee Roasters. You don't want to miss this.
It's the best coffee ever. You got to try it.
Lots of chickens.
Yay. Okay. So what should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens
every day and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening.